the left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yale. A shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
All right, let's get things going. Hey, happy Thursday. Happy final day of October. Happy Halloween. It is Thursday, October 31st, 2024. We're underway. Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson of Post Media along with you. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio on this Thursday. And in the midst of a very spooky four-game losing skid for the Calgary Flames.
I see what you did there.
Very scary. Yeah, that's about as good as I got for Halloween-themed things. I'll be perfectly honest with you. The other hour of Flames Talk on this Thursday, we're going to do our best to go Halloween-themed as well, but that's about all I got right now. But all of a sudden, things seem a little less rosy for the Calgary Flames, don't they? Because that's two straight, really lackluster performances. And four straight losses in total, all in regulation. And now, Wes, the Flames are doing what I was afraid they were going to do, or what they really couldn't afford to do. And what I mean by that is now the Flames are very close to undoing all the good work they did in their first six games. When they started with a 5-0-1, six-game point streak, put themselves in a really good spot, best start in franchise history, and now have turned this into an extended losing skid. And that's one thing that you really wanted to see them avoid. 2 years ago, 5-1-0, followed by seven straight losses. Last year, 2-1-1, followed by six straight losses. This year, 5-0-1, followed by four straight losses, and the team will try to keep it at four come Friday against Jacob Markstrom and the New Jersey Devils. And that's one thing I was really hoping that they were going to be able to avoid is that long losing skid early in the season after they'd gotten off to a really good start. And yet here we are. They've dropped four in regulation, and the last two have been in really ugly fashion.
I think that's the spooky part, is the fashion that it has happened in. You know, you don't often hear the sort of comments that we heard from head coach Ryan Huska last night. You don't often hear the bench boss, and this bench boss in particular, a fairly measured approach, I would say, to his post-game comments. And last night he essentially said, and I'm paraphrasing here, he essentially said, it looks like we're trying to win cute, we're trying to win pretty, and that's not going to work for the group we have.
Do you want to, instead of paraphrasing, you want to hear from him?
I thought I did a pretty good job of it, but
let's go for it. I thought it was not a scary paraphrasing from you. This was Ryan Huska, and you know, look, the coach is going to remain calm 99% of the time. You know, now he's into his second year as head coach. I don't think we've seen him truly lose his temper at any point. That's just not who Ryan Huska is, but the words he uses, you can tell when he's very upset with the way his group is playing. This was a little bit of the coach on Wednesday night following a 5-1 loss to Utah.
I thought we got outplayed in almost every position. And the last two games for me, there's a little pushback with how we have to play. And, you know, if we're going to try to do things on our own or try to play a fancy, cute game, it doesn't work for us. So, you know, it's something that hopefully the room recognizes, understands that the last two games, the work ethic hasn't been where it needs to be. And for me, that starts right at the top and it works its way right down. And that's a big reason why we scored one goal in two games and we've given up 10. Like, it can't happen that way for us.
And I think, you know, I think there was also an expectation that after the poor performance in Vegas that this team would respond. Does it concern you that it's now two in a row?
Sure. Absolutely, and that's, I guess, what I was alluding to, maybe a little bit of pushback with how we have to play. So hopefully it's something that the older guys take upon themselves, because what they stand for or what they accept is what we're going to get at the end of the day. So if they're okay with it, we're going to see that more often. So there's a lot of people that aren't okay with it, I'll tell you that much, but we have to make sure that we're pushing together in the right direction.
So that was head coach Ryan Huska on Wednesday following the 5-1 loss. And that's when you hear that from the head coach, you know that he's not very happy with the way his group is playing. And you could tell even looking at him that you know, the effort that he saw, especially as Francis asked him, the effort that he saw, especially after a 5-0 loss two nights prior, to go out there and again, it just was, that's two straight games where there's been a very noticeable lack of pushback, which had been part of their DNA through the first eight games of the season, even in those two losses against Carolina and Winnipeg. And maybe the most alarming thing is now six straight periods with far too many passengers. Like the abundance of passengers that we've seen the last two games compared to what we had seen in the first eight games is also quite stark. And also one of those things you're like, okay, that needs to change here and needs to change here fairly soon if the Flames are going to want to get things on track.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I know one of the things that Ryan Huska said was there's not really any sugarcoating what we've been seeing. And I think you hit the nail on the head, buddy. Like, this isn't an issue of one guy not pulling his weight or two guys not pulling their weight or maybe just a line or a defense pairing who's struggling kind of more than everybody else. This has been darn near team-wide on that two-game road trip. Like, if you and I put a line down this piece of paper and started talking about the guys we liked on the trip and didn't, there wouldn't be a whole lot in the, hey, we're pretty impressed by how this guy played the last two games. That would be a pretty white piece of paper, would it not?
Yeah.
And so I think as the coach was saying, and you know, as you and I sat and talked about the Vegas game, like there can't be an abandonment of how this team needs to play to have success. This is not like I think of the conversations you have with the 88-89 Flames, and you kind of hear one thing over and over from them. They'll always tell you, we could play any way you wanted to. If you wanted to play run and gun, we could do it. If you wanted to play, you know, a grind it out, slug it out kind of game, if you wanted to brawl, we could do any of it. And these Flames are not the 88-89 Flames. I don't need to tell anybody that. But they're not a team that can beat you any which way. They're not a team that can let you pick the style you want to play and then beat you at it. There is a very distinct brand of hockey that the 24-25 Calgary Flames will need to play if they want to have success.
Yep.
It's a style or a brand that is sort of designed, for lack of a better term, to make up for offensive shortcomings. It's an acknowledgement that they can't outscore mistakes, that they can't take unnecessary risks and get away with it. It's an acknowledgement that they have to really lean on other teams and make it uncomfortable for them to play, or it's going to look pretty darn easy. And what did it look the last two nights for the Vegas Golden Knights and for Utah Hockey Club? It looked pretty darn easy, didn't it? Maybe not in that first period in Vegas, but after that, I think we watched five periods of a team that, unfortunately, especially with Michael Backlund's special occasion, we saw a team that mostly went through the motions on that road trip. And that's not something we've said about this group.
Yeah, there's a few things that were a little alarming. And first of all, I'll echo what you said. I'll echo what the head coach said. Like, this is a team that, because they don't have the high-end talent. I'll read you this text from Dale that came in. Dale says, Pat, those lackluster performances had a lot to do with what the other team was doing, teams that are way more talented than the Flames. And I think that is a very important part, especially Vegas. If the Flames don't play the way they need to play, they're going to open the door to most other teams on any given night. But especially against the teams that have the elite talent, like the Vegas Golden Knights, like New Jersey on Friday night, and numerous others, that's when things could, if the other team brings what they need to bring and their work ethic is where it needs to be, that's where things can, I think, get really ugly for this team. And I think that's maybe what we've seen the last two nights. So I think that the first two losses of this losing skid, I think, give you an idea that when the Flames work hard against good teams, they can be competitive. And the last two games have shown you when that work ethic does drop off a little bit, when there are more people sitting in the back seat or the passenger seat, and you go up against a team that's on it, then things can really start to spiral on you. And that's why, as Ryan Huska says, last two games, other teams scored 10 times and they've scored once. And so I think it's a pretty stark reminder of what the Flames need to do, how the Flames need to play to be successful. And it's a hard brand, and it's going to be tough to do that 82 out of 82. But now it's been two games in a row where, for the vast majority of both games, they haven't executed like they need to. They haven't brought that to a man. And I think now it's all about limiting the amount of times that actually happens.
Yeah, because last night in Utah should not have been a game that you sort of worried about the engagement level. You had the captain skating in game number 1,000. All the sort of, you know, special celebration, all the pomp and circumstance that comes with that sort of milestone. And we heard all the right things about, we're going to play hard for him. We want to make sure that his night doesn't get ruined, and essentially did the opposite. But they were also coming off getting pounded in Vegas. You know, you're coming off a 5-0 loss. And I was really curious kind of what we'd see from both teams, because as you heard outlined many times on the broadcast, or you know, if you were listening to Derek and to Megan, Utah was coming off a real meltdown in their last game, right? That was a team that blew a late lead, lost in pretty glorious fashion. And so you kind of thought you'd see two teams that were pretty desperate to bounce back last night, and you only saw one.
Yeah.
And that's concerning.
That's right. I forgot, like, Utah, with the way that things went with them on Monday,
right,
and giving up that lead to San Jose late, that's a really good point. They were also looking to rebound, and they came, and they did. Their work ethic was where it needed to be. A couple of maybe overzealous penalties that the Flames could not capitalize on in the first period. But yeah, they did. They brought what they needed to bring to the table, and the Flames did not consistently.
I think this is where the start of season success becomes really important for the Flames. And I don't say that from the standpoint of, okay, well, at least you have some points in the bank. At least you started 5-0-1. And so despite losing four straight, you're still above 500. What I mean is that I think that start of season winning streak showed them exactly how they need to play to have success. And even if it didn't show them, because they maybe knew it already, I think it reinforced it. I think I know you talked lots with Vix while I was away about the identity of this team, about the buy-in to the way they had to play. And I think that's important, because that identity and that buy-in, they forgot to pack that when they went to Vegas and to Utah.
Yeah.
But because of the success that they've had early in the season, I don't think those guys are sitting there on their off day today wondering how their team can have success. I don't think they're sitting there wondering, geez, I wonder what we'd have to do differently to not get our butts kicked next game. They know exactly what they have to do. And I think you can look at this sort of two ways. You can be concerned because they had back-to-back duds. You can be concerned that they didn't show up for Michael Backlund's 1,000th game. You could be concerned that Blake Coleman, who I consider the sort of ultimate voice of reason in that locker room, came out and said, this is going to be one of those nights where we find out what we're made of. And you didn't like the answer.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of potential reason for concern. And yet, you know, if you're a glass half full type, I think those 5 or 6 games at the start of the season showed them what the result of the buy-in can be. It's just getting back to that.
Yep. Text line's open, by the way, 960-960 this hour on Flames Talk. And I do, like, it is disappointing that on Michael Backlund's big night, that was the way things went. And as Ryan Huska said postgame, yeah, he'll always remember it, but he'll also always remember how it went. And it was one of their worst efforts of the 10 games they've played so far this year.
It's a tough night for Michael, too, right? He's on the ice for 3 goals against. Certainly not all his fault. 2 of them were on the penalty kill. You know, that's a scenario you're going to give up some goals in. But that wasn't his fairy tale 1,000th game, that's for sure.
And it was so cool to see like his friends in the 1,000 jerseys and to see them warming up. You knew they were going to do this, but even still, to see them warming up with the all in the Backlund 11 captain jerseys and to see those shirts and hats and all that type of stuff. It's too bad that that's the way things went for Michael Backlund on his big night. But now Friday, an opportunity with Jacob Markstrom in the house, an opportunity to get a small measure of revenge on your old goalie. And also to make Michael Backlund's Silver Stick Ceremony Award, ceremony night rather, a big one. By the way, if you're going to the game or are thinking about going to the game on Friday night at the Dome, it's about an 8-minute ceremony they've got for Michael Backlund prior to the game. So puck drop won't be until about 7:16. The ceremony begins just after 7 o'clock. So be in your seat around 7 o'clock. Matt Stajan told us earlier this week about how they do the silver stick, which I thought was super cool. I'd never heard that. I didn't know that they used one of your game sticks from the 1,000th game and then bronze it or whatever you'd call it, put it in silver and do all that type of stuff. And then they get the mini sticks for the kids and all that type of stuff. So it's going to be cool. Good little video package and an opportunity for fans of the Dome to pay tribute to the second player in franchise history officially now to have played 1,000 games. And the ceremony starts just after 7 o'clock on Friday. So hopefully they can get a little bit of or try to make up a little bit for Wednesday night Friday at the Dome.
Yeah, it's going to be a really cool ceremony. I'm excited. You know, we're fortunate that we get to go to all of the games. And so, you know, they don't all stand out. You don't circle them all on the calendar. But these pregame ceremonies, whether it's 1,000 games, whether it's a couple of the banner raisings we've been fortunate enough to be in the house for, it's always really neat.
Yeah.
And I think the sort of, you know, if you're Michael Backlund, you're going to soak up that ceremony, no doubt. But he's got, I think, like 20 family and friends in from Sweden. You know, his grandmother's flying in, his skills coach, his, you know, his off-season fitness trainer. Like, he's got so many people. And if this is another dud, and Michael Backlund is a guy who takes so much on himself for how the whole team performs. But I think like a third consecutive, I'll call it lackluster effort, would just be unacceptable.
Yeah.
And it'd be certainly a bit of a slap in the face, I think, to the captain. But it's also, you know, it would be really concerning because it would mark a significant departure from what we saw as recently as a week and a half ago.
Let me read you a few texts, 960-960, then we can dive in a little bit on the news of this Thursday. First of all, Matt in Cochrane says, would you believe the Flames probably took advantage of teams that played down to their level like we've seen from the Flames many times over the years? Now, a few weeks into the season, teams aren't sleeping on them, and the hardworking Flames struggle, and the hard work gets harder to play in that style. There could very well be a little bit of that going on, Matt. Tom in Airdrie says, this is all part of the process of a retool or rebuild. We need to develop a culture of winning, which involves all the young players learning what it takes. The frustration is when you see veterans not putting that effort in and players in the minors that should be up with the team through the process for the future. This says, crashing to reality, boys. Hate to say it, as I'm always hopeful for successful seasons. I think the Flames caught a couple of teams off guard early. They let that good start get some hopes up. They're picking in the top 10 come the 25 draft. It's a slow burn to recover from the potential window that closed after the 22 season. Stay the course mentality needs to prevail. I do know that stay the course is very much what Craig Conroy and company are looking at. And finally, John in Lethbridge says, I think this road trip was a really great litmus test. Flames are under construction. That's the truth. They need that center. Just a little bit at 960-960. We'll touch a little bit on center on the Daily Flames Roundtable coming up later on this hour.
Yeah, it is. I know we're going to touch on it, but it has become more and more glaring, hasn't it?
Yeah.
At this point, we've seen sort of some different options that haven't worked, and I don't know if it's that they haven't worked at center. I'd certainly have some concerns about just the overall play of the individuals who've been auditioned at center. I think Martin Pospisil in the past week, 2 weeks has been sort of more, he's been as ineffective as I've seen him at the NHL level. He's not looking like the guy who burst on scene exactly a year ago, the guy who...
You saw a little bit of that with that poke check and breakaway where he broke away,
right,
and used his speed so effectively on Wednesday night. That was a promising thing to see, but you're right. On balance through 10 games, we haven't seen enough of that.
He hit the brakes a couple times on the forecheck last night and actually left me wondering if he's playing through a little bit of something. Like, didn't look like a guy who was eager to finish hits when, you know, typically he's a guy who's sort of accelerating into them. And, you know, maybe a little bit of a pass for Yegor Sharangovich in the sense that he's just getting up to speed after an injury absence, but he's been the other option at center. And I don't think he's yet found his game either.
Yep. News of this Thursday is a roster swap for the Flames. It just felt, when the Flames sent Matt Coronato down, just talking to enough people, it never felt like that was going to be a long-term thing. And I know there were a lot of people upset about the decision to send Matt Coronato down to help activate Yegor Sharangovich. It was my belief that, you know, it was always going to be something that could be changed in the very near future. And what, less than a week later or a week later, Matt Coronado's up.
6 days.
6 days? Okay, so it's Friday. Okay,
yeah.
So Matt Coronato back up. He's been recalled from the Wranglers, and Sam Hanzek's been assigned to the American Hockey League for the first time in his career, which I think is the right move. First of all, this very similar to the Coronato decision. They wanted to get him down there and playing until there was a more natural spot for him to pop into on the NHL roster. At the time when they sent him down a week ago, he was in that fourth line platoon role. Now with everything in the blender, and who the hell knows what things are going to look like come Friday against New Jersey, the doors open again for Coronato to be back and getting more time that fits his skill set and where he is in his development. Hanzek, I thought, struggled mightily on Wednesday in Utah. I know it was his first game back in six, and I know that he was shaking off rust and all that type of stuff, but Hanzek was very, I thought, off of it. And, you know, he was I thought he really struggled in his own end, really struggled with some of those defensive reads, didn't do much at the other end of the ice. And that's not to say that that couldn't just be a bad game. But I think with him coming off an injury, with him taking the hit that he took against Chicago and it having the impact on him that he did, I just think for right now, going down and playing big minutes in the American League is what he needs to do. You know, even if it's only for a week or two, I think going down and playing big minutes in the American League, and I would have been saying this, I was thinking it after the game on Wednesday night, and I was kind of like, you know, like for the first time, maybe that is the way to go. I was kind of the opinion, maybe you give it one more game in the NHL before you send him down to the American League. Well, they've got a guy in Coronato who scored a couple of goals on Tuesday, who's gotten his two games in the American League. Hanzek struggled, needs the playing time. Doesn't mean this is a permanent long-term thing, but I do think this is the right call for the Flames, especially knowing that Coronado is the guy that's coming back up, which I think is also really important, because on merit, he probably didn't belong in the American League with what he's done so far through training camp and in the regular season.
Yeah, on Hanzek first, I believe, or I have a sneaking suspicion is probably a better way to put it, that if they didn't get their wheels blown off in Vegas, if they weren't looking for some sort of spark after a shellacking on Monday, that he probably would have been assigned to the minors without having played an NHL game. I think that it always made sense to let
you think that he would have been healthy and assigned right to the Wranglers.
Yeah, like
I was wondering about too.
Yeah, I think, and this isn't based on something I've been told. This is just my hunch. Like I think that would have made the most sense to let him get kind of up and running, even though he hadn't missed a ton of time, 5 games, I believe, to let him get up and running in the AHL. And then I think the plan potentially changes when you don't play very well in Vegas and you look at him and say, hey, maybe this is a guy who can give us a spark. This is another guy who has some offensive ability. You know, we're struggling. We heard Ryan Huska say we don't have a lot of chemistry. We don't have a lot going offensively right now. And so, you know, if you're Sam Hanzek, I don't think this is a bad thing. I don't think this is an indictment at all. And I think you really look no further than the guy that you're passing in the hallway at the Saddle Dome in Matt Coronato. He was down for 6 days. And what he did was go out on Tuesday night for the Wranglers and score a pair of goals against San Diego. And I think Sam Hanzek can look at it and say, okay, well, you know, I saw a few shifts on the power play with the Flames, but that didn't last too long. I wasn't being used on the penalty kill. That's fine. I'm a 19-year-old playing in the NHL, but I can go down to the Wranglers and do all these things, yeah, right? And then you look at it and say, well, Matt Coronato was down for 6 days. You know, I know there was a lot of grousing on social media when Matt Coronato was assigned. Oh, he shouldn't be going. And, you know, the one thing I've kind of said consistently is now it's up to Matt Coronato to do what I think Connor Zary and Martin Pospisil did last year, which was play so well you can't go down. And I don't think Matt Coronato's done that yet. I think he's gotten closer to it. I think his details have improved. I think his skating's improved. And I think the next step for him is make it impossible for them to send you to the Wranglers.
Yeah.
And I think he's knocking at the door of that. Maybe this is the time, but there is another step there. I understand the frustration. I understand people were saying, you know, why is there a spot for Anthony Mantha, who, by the way, I thought finally responded a little bit last night, scored a goal. I understand why you can look at a few veterans who aren't part of the rebuild and say that guy should be gone instead. I get all that. And I think that happens as soon as Matt Coronato takes that step where he just makes it impossible for them to send him back. And as I said, I think he's getting kind of closer and closer to that.
Yeah, I do like this call for the Flames. As soon as I saw it, I was like, yeah, you know, I like this call. I think it's the right move. I think it's good for both players' development. And just texting with Mick, Megan Mickelson makes a really good point as well, that, you know, for a team that's looking not just for a spark, but after 2 games where maybe the coaching staff felt the compete level was a little lower.
Sure.
That's one thing they've always really liked about Coronato is that, you know, he works, he competes, and he brings a high level of that.
Yeah.
And that, not to say Hanzek didn't, but he's still learning what it takes to do that at the highest level, mm-hmm, and could use some time in the American League to learn a little bit more about that. I think Coronato coming back up gives him a little bit more of that bite too, which is something they're looking for after a couple straight losses.
I mean, we're talking about a team that just got outscored 10-1 on the road, and we're talking about a player going back to his draft year who has had a knack for creating offense and has done it at every level, sort of except the NHL. I believe he has 5 goals at the highest level so far, but like you can see it. It's on the cusp, right? And if he combines the work ethic that he showed, especially in that really impressive game he had with Ryan Lomberg, and was it Justin Kirkland?
Yep.
Yeah. That
2 games in a row they did. Like,
yeah. I'm thinking specifically of the one Coronato
scored twice,
including an empty netter. But if he combines that work rate with some of the natural abilities he has, he's going to be just fine. And I'll say the exact same about Sam Hanzek. I mean, we're talking about a kid, which is sort of funny considering everyone was so worried about him a month and a half ago. We're talking about a kid at 19 who's now ahead of schedule.
Yeah. And hasn't even turned 20 yet, as you mentioned. Turns 20 in November.
Yeah. A couple weeks.
He'll be just fine.
Yeah. I'm not too worried. Would you put Coronato? I know we got to go to break here. Would you put Coronato in Hanzek's spot last night with Backlund and Coleman, or you have something else up your sleeve?
I'd think about that. I'd put him in the top nine.
Yeah.
Wherever I'm putting him, I'd put him in the top nine, that's for sure. Wes, Pat, this hour of Flames Talk from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, and now the voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills. It's time for our Thursday Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. Let's welcome in Willsy right now to complete our roundtable. And gents, we talked a little bit about this a little earlier this hour, just before bringing you on, Derek, but the Flames have made a roster move, and that is Sam Hontzek heading to the American League and being swapped with Matt Coronato, who was sent down just 6 days ago. And I remember on Friday of last week, Willsy, and we were talking about that, and we said, yeah, a little surprising, but you know, probably won't be a permanent thing and probably won't be a long-term thing. Well, less than a week later, Coronato recalled and could very well, likely will be in the lineup Friday night against New Jersey. What are our thoughts on a little roster swap of a couple young players on this Thursday?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I thought they might send Sam Hontzek down when he was taken off of IR. He's a 19-year-old player and has only had a cup of coffee at the AHL level. I think he can benefit from some time with the Calgary Wranglers. And I just think that at this stage of his career, Matt Coronato is more NHL ready. He's played in some different roles as a member of the Flames. He's certainly been very productive with the Wranglers, even with the Flames guys. He's only played in five games this season, but he scored 2 goals. Over 82 games, that is a 31 or 32 goal pace. And that's what Matt Coronato's MO is. He is a guy who puts the puck in his opponent's net. And for a Flames team that has been struggling to score during this four-game losing streak, maybe he gives them a shot in the arm offensively. Maybe you even see him on the second power play unit. And I don't think that this is a demotion that Sam Hontzek should hang his head about. Again, he plays very well in the preseason, earns a job on the team, and rightfully so. He led the team in preseason points, but you know, the games have ramped up since the end of the preseason and the start of the regular season, and he's pointless in his first 5 NHL regular season games. I still think the guy's got a ton of potential and will produce points at this level at some point in time, but I think it will be good for him to go down, get more minutes, and maybe produce some points in the AHL level before he comes back up to the NHL. So, again, not a knock on Hontzek. I think he's going to be just fine. But nobody was hurt by too much time or, in his case, some more time at the AHL level. So I think it'll be good for him. And I think Coronato deserves another shot.
I do believe that this puts Sam Hontzek back on, I think, the plan that the Calgary Flames had for him this season. And I give the team, the organization credit, certainly give the kid a lot of credit for what he did in the preseason and what he did in training camp. And I give the team credit for keeping him around, for looking and saying that this is a young guy, this is a teenage player who has proven that he deserves a spot on the NHL roster to start the season. That was, make no mistake, never the development plan for Sam Hontzek. This was going to be his first professional campaign. He was going to spend a whole bunch of time with the Wranglers. And if he earned a call up toward the end of the season, that was almost going to be gravy. That was, it's not like I am sitting here with the development plan, but I can tell you for sure that would have been what the Calgary Flames had in mind for Sam Hontzek. He accelerated the plan by earning a job in the NHL to start the season, but I don't think that the AHL is at this point the wrong place for him to be. I think the lessons that he would have taken from those 5 games, you know, the successes, the, you know, I thought there was a really neat moment on the broadcast last night where they showed assistant coach Brad Larsen having a long chat with him after a turnover as he tried to clear his own zone. Like the different things he would have learned. I can imagine at 19, 5 NHL games feels like 5 textbooks worth of experience. And I think that's all going to benefit Sam Hontzek. I think the AHL is the right place for him to be for now. And I do believe that there is a path back sooner than later if he shows that he needs to be in the NHL. And I think that's what Matt Coronato is trying to do at this point, is I don't even want to say show, but leave no doubt that he should be in the NHL. I keep referencing Connor Zary and Martin Pospisil last year. They made it impossible for the Calgary mm-hmm. Flames to reassign them to the minors. I don't think, mm-hmm. and I know some people disagree with this, I wouldn't say yet that Matt Coronato has made it impossible to send him back. I think he's getting closer. Maybe this is the call-up. It happens. But that's his next challenge. Make it so that when they are getting a guy back from injury or they want to bring a guy up, that even though you're the easy candidate because you're waiver exempt, that they're not the guy you're looking at because you've made it clear you can't go back. That's the next step for him.
So there's a few things for me here, guys. I mean, first of all, I think is, you know, you watch Hanzek play on Wednesday in Utah and see him struggle. You combine that with what happened in the Chicago game where he went to deliver a hit and a guy with NHL level man strength belted him and basically said, get off me. And that resulted in an injury. I think those two things combined are pretty good. I was kind of the opinion on post game on Wednesday, guys, that, you know, if they wanted to do another game or two and see if Hanzek could get up to speed, they could do that. But for the first time, I was kind of thinking, okay, maybe the American League is the right way for him to go. Instead of doing that, they're doing it right now. And I think that, you know, if you're Craig Conroy, you're Ryan Huska, and you see a guy get injured and essentially get injured based on being a 19-year-old without NHL man strength going up against like a 31-year-old who does have it, that combined with the fact that he really struggled in his first game back, you're like, okay, that's okay. You're not even 20 years old. Go play huge minutes in the American League, because Ryan Huska is probably looking at it and saying, okay, we put Hanzek on the backline line. We're in the midst of a 4-game losing skid. I don't think I'm going to put him back there again. So then where's Hanzek going? Is he going to the fourth line with Kirkland? Is he going to a healthy scratch land? And if either of those are the answer and you take into account that, you know, he got belted pretty good in that Blackhawks game, it's like, okay, you know what? Maybe the American League for the time being is the perfect place for him. He can get used to the physicality. He can build up some more strength. He can play huge minutes down there. All of that makes a ton of sense, and so I get it from a Hanzek standpoint. And then you've also got the whole idea of Coronato, who had a pretty decent training camp. It may not have popped quite the way Hanzek did in the preseason, but played well. And then
early he did.
And absolutely he was. And you know, I thought on balance too, it was still a good training camp for Coronato. And I thought a second year in a row where you're like, yeah, he should probably make the team. He did. He sat out for 2 games early and then came into that game against the Oilers at Rogers Place, played well. And I thought the 5 games he played looked good in and looked like an NHLer in. And I didn't believe on merit that he needed to be sent to the American League. As we talked about on Friday, Wilsey, that was a numbers game as much as anything else. And when you're victim of a numbers game because you're one of the guys that does not have waiver status and you get sent down, and the general manager knows it, yeah, he's going to try to work to get you back up. And the opportunity has now arisen for him to come back up. I think that the compete level, the potential to generate offense, all that type of stuff can help a team that is in the midst of a 4-game losing skid, and two of the last two losses have been quite lackluster. So I think it makes sense on both fronts. It makes sense to bring Coronato back up, and it makes sense to get Hanzek, who still isn't 20 years old, to get some more seasoning and play some real big minutes in the American League and get those high-leverage special teams minutes as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. And Wes, I think you put it perfectly, and I say that in part because when the guys on the morning show asked me today about Matt Coronato, I basically said the same thing. Did he deserve to go down? No, probably not. But he also didn't put the Flames in a position where they had no choice but to keep him, right? So maybe this is the recall where Matt Coronato comes up and never goes back down. And the other thing that I would add about Matt Coronato is that the Flames right now, at least to me, are struggling to play with the type of pace that they need to and that they did earlier in the season. The one thing that jumped out to me about Matt Coronato during his last stint was that he was playing the game with a lot more pace and he was moving his feet consistently. And I think it's something that a number of players in the team are struggling to do right now. So, you know, if Coronato can come back up and play with that type of pace, I think you're going to see a productive player and a guy who maybe doesn't go down again. As far as Hanzek, The one thing I've noticed about him during the regular season is that he is not playing as assertively as he did during the preseason. And I remember, you know, thinking going into that preseason opener against the Kraken that, you know, he didn't have a chance in heck to make this team. And then he made a couple of plays and started playing with confidence and started playing assertively. And he looked like a completely different player after that. He looked like a guy who figured out that he could do some of the same things at the NHL preseason level that made him a first-round pick and that he's done at the junior level in the past. So I think going down to the American Hockey League, playing in different situations, playing more minutes, playing against a lower level of competition will help him get his confidence back and some of that assertiveness back, because he's a big body. And yeah, he doesn't have the man strength that some guys in their mid-20s or 30s do. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, he's still a big, strong kid who will fill out and, you know, I think become more physically imposing when he does. But he's also got his great skill set and he can skate well. So I think that he's probably going to go down, have some success, and then at some point in time, probably come back up and be put in a better position to have success in the regular season, kind of like he did in the preseason, even if it's not to that level.
Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek West, Pat, on this Thursday. Gents, we've seen some line juggling over the last four or five periods for the Flames. I have no idea what they will look like for Friday. With the way things went against Utah, I could see, like, you could throw at me 97 different permutations, and I'd probably say, yeah, okay, maybe that's the way they go. I honestly have no idea what the coach is going to do. But I wanted to ask this because, you know, the Martin Pospisil center ice experiment has not worked as planned, and they've had Sharon Govich down there for the last four periods playing down the middle. Question I would have is, why haven't they given a go to Zeri yet in that spot? I know it's only 10 games in, but why do you think they've been, even in the preseason, I think you only got one game down the middle, why do you think they've been hesitant to go to Zeri playing center?
Let me answer your question with a question for both of you. Outside of maybe Nazem Kadri, has any Flames forward consistently driven the team offensively like Connor Zeri has in the first 10 games of the season?
No. I think he's been one of the most noticeable guys on a night-in, night-out basis.
And you know what? I think that so strongly that I would personally remove the outside of Nazem Kadri disclaimer.
Okay.
I think potentially Connor Zeri has driven more offense than anybody on this Flames roster.
Yeah, for me, he is top two as far as the forwards go. And that's why I would not move him to center. They need more guys to push them offensively, not less guys. And what we saw when they moved Martin Pospisil from the wing to the center is a player who, at least in my opinion, started overthinking it. Instead of just going out there and playing instinctively, which he did to such a great degree as a rookie, and we've seen it times in his sophomore season, we see a guy who looks hesitant, and part of that with Pospisil is probably him being afraid to take penalties at this point in time, as I guess he should be, but he also can't be because he's not as effective when he's not kind of playing on the edge, but I get where he's coming from. As far as Zeri is concerned, for me, he has been one of the most consistent players on the team this season. I notice him every single night, and I notice him playing well on the wing. So my question would be, why move him? And we also talked about the line combinations going into Wednesday's game against Utah. And, you know, I was in favor of leaving him on the left side of a line with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman simply because I think that's been the Flames' most consistent line this season. So when you're lacking consistency as a team, why break up the one forward line that's given you the most consistency this season? Now, I don't hate reuniting the Kadri and the kids line with Connor Zeri playing with Nazem Kadri and Martin Pospisil. So, and I wasn't stomping my feet when I saw the Flames do that for Wednesday's game. But I don't know. I just think right now you need more players who are playing at a high level. And I do wonder if you were to move Zeri from the wing to center, if maybe he'd start overthinking it. And then his game would fall off, kind of like Pospisil's has. So I'd leave him on the wing. I'd prefer to see him with Backlund and Coleman. Hey, if they want to play him with Kadri and Pospisil to maybe get the other winger on that line going, I get that too. But I probably would just leave him in the wing for the time being.
Wilsey, I'm going to echo so much of what you just said, because I agree with, I think, 98.5% of it, except I'm going to spin it a little bit the other direction, because I think everything that you just outlined might be the reason that you should try him at center now. And everyone who listens knows that I was on team Martin Pospisil should be up the middle during the summer. That was the one I wanted to see the most. And, you know, I wondered about whether Connor Zary was just best on the wing. And now, you know, with what we've seen from Pospisil, I think it's time to try Zary there. And everything you just laid out, the confidence he's playing with, the way that he's driving offense, the fact that he is more willing than any other Flames forward to have the puck on a stick and try to do something with it. You know, Nazem Kadri becomes a good comparison now, because we're seeing shades of Nazem Kadri, and the way that Connor Zary is now willing to make some mistakes if it means trying to make a play. He's willing to try to beat guys one-on-one. And now that's made me curious whether he can take that confidence to center. And so while the way he's playing might be a great reason to leave him on the wing, I'm kind of starting to look at it as, hey, this guy's feeling it right now. He's been one of our best players. If there's a time to try him at center, I think this might be it.
That's kind of where I am as well, guys. And Willsy, like, I don't disagree with what you're saying, because I think that there's, I understand, like, kind of the hesitance where you're like, okay, well, this guy has been as important as an offensive driver as we've had. Do we want to put more on his shoulders? But the other side of that for me is the fact that we're also talking about a guy who is playing with a ton of confidence and is, I think, because he's done such a good job driving, and because we're seeing that type of confidence, and here's the kicker for me, because there is such a glaring need to find another center, not just for this season. This season's fine, but guys, they need to find centers. They got a 3 to 5 year plan. Who are their centers beyond Backlund and Kadri, who are 34 and 35 years old? Like, these guys, and I love the way they're both playing, but they're both closer to the end than they are the start. And so who are their centers going forward? They haven't drafted the number one guy. I love what Kirkland's doing, but he's not a top 1-2 center for them going forward. The Pospisil situation, the Sharon Govich situation has not worked out for them long term. And maybe it will, maybe it won't, but I don't know. I look at Zary and I see this guy carries the puck with all kinds of confidence, and they've had such difficulty entering the zone, last two games especially, but he's so good at entering the zone with possession because, like, he's the best guy they've had entering the zone since, rest in peace, Johnny Gaudreau. I honestly believe that. Best guy with the puck on his stick entering the zone since Johnny. And the center iceman's job in so many ways is to enter the zone with possession and then make that right read. I didn't mind him in the 7 games he played down the middle late last season, albeit in garbage time because they weren't making the playoffs. I don't know. They've tried Pospisil. They've tried Sharon Govich, and I don't even have a problem with them continuing to try 17 in that spot as well. I'm open to being having my mind changed on him playing center as well. But I just think for a couple of reasons. One, because he's playing with so much confidence. Two, because I think he's your best long-term fit at center on the roster who is not named Nazem or Michael. And three, because there's such a glaring need for somebody to step into that job right now. At some point, I think it would make a ton of sense to give him a run down the middle.
Yeah, I think those are all good points. And again, I wouldn't be kicking and screaming if I saw Connor Zary centering a line at practice or the morning skate on Friday morning ahead of that game against the Devils. I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. I mean, the team's just played its two worst game of the seasons. And for me, it's not even close. So I wouldn't be surprised if Ryan Huska made some more changes going into Friday night's game. And yeah, Connor Zary's playing with a ton of confidence right now. And maybe he could take that from playing at a high level on the wing to playing at a high level on center and start to answer some of those questions the Flames probably have long term as far as who their men up the middle are going to be. And again, you've got Kadri under contract long term, but is he going to be here long term? I think that's still to be determined. Mm-hmm. And Who knows how much longer Backlund's going to want to play? And again, Kirkland, for me, he's a bottom six guy, and hey, he's 28. So yeah. he's no spring chicken either. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. I mean, I've been a proponent of Sharon Govich at center, but with that said, guys, he misses the first seven games of the season. He has come back. I don't think he's been bad, but he hasn't been as good as we know he can be. So I'm going to argue with myself a little bit here. Maybe you move him to the wing just to get him going, because his most dangerous weapon is his shot, and he's got five shots in three games. So is that on him? Partly. I think it's also probably partly on the team, because guys around him aren't playing well either. But hey, early in the season when the Flames were winning, you know, they're 5-1-1, the best six-game start in the history of the franchise. I said a lot of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, right now it's broke. They've lost four in a row. They've played their two worst games of the season against the Golden Knights and Utah. So it is broke right now. So you're trying to fix it. They made a bunch of changes going into Wednesday's game, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them make more changes going into Friday's game. And if one of those changes was moving Zeri to center, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, I honestly have no idea what the heck we're going to see on Friday morning. It's a fast, the center ice conversation ain't, that's not getting pushed to the background anytime soon. I know that much. And hey, I think there's going to be a lot of interesting conversations about that going forward. We had a Jacob Markstrom topic on the docket, and then the Coronado news happened. So we'll save some Markstrom talk for Friday at the Dome, Wilsey. For now, my friend, have a great rest of your Thursday. We'll see you at Morning Skate.
Okay, guys, we'll see you tomorrow.
He is Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That is your Daily Flames Roundtable. As we start to wrap things up this hour, Shannon Colton, our producers this hour, and this hour has, not wrapping up, that has been the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.